the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I am a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. So today on Why We Cook, we're going to talk about a couple different things. But first, I want to relay a little story from this past weekend. So I was down in Baltimore this weekend. My friend Beej Flamholtz is a caterer and a private chef in the Baltimore area, and he was catering a big party this past weekend, and he needed some help, so he asked if I'd come down and help him out, and I said sure. So I went down Saturday and spent the night and helped him out doing this big party. And I also went down just so I could take a look at Baltimore, because oddly enough, having lived in New York my entire life, I've never been to Baltimore. It's only 4 hours away, and I've never been there. You know, it's like I've been to Egypt before I'd ever even gone to Los Angeles. So I thought I'd go to Baltimore, take a look around. So anyway, Beej picks me up at the station on Saturday afternoon, and we're both starving, and we have a couple hours before the party. So we go to get some lunch. We go to a restaurant that has kind of a Mediterranean theme to the menu. You know, like hummus and caponata and lamb burgers and stuff like that, but also like omelet sandwiches, you know, the usual kind of semi-upscale lunch stuff. And we're sitting there and we're reading the menu. And at exactly the same time, we both spot something on the menu. And we both start laughing. And it was under the salad headings. And it was a salad that was described like this, more or less. Salad of mixed greens, toasted walnuts, gorgonzola, and suck on feet. S-U-C-K-O-N-F-I-T. Suck on feet. And so we just looked at each other and both started laughing because we knew what they were trying to say, but I don't think every one of their guests knew what they were trying to say. Some of you may know what they were looking for there. What they were looking for was duck confit. D-U-C-K-C-O-N-F-I-T. Duck confit, not suck on feet. And we thought it was pretty funny. And it was titled as a duck salad. So it was duck salad, mixed greens, suck on feet. And Beej and I were laughing, but we were also kind of mystified because was this really a typo? Or was the person who, you know, typesets and prints their menus actually playing a joke to see if anybody would catch it? I mean, have these people ever heard of spell check? Do they do any sort of proofreading before they print their menu? And we were wondering if anyone else had pointed it out to them or not. Of course, we didn't do it, which we should have, but I really wish now I had taken a picture of it because I could have put it up on the Why We Cook website. It was pretty funny. So I didn't order the suck on feet. I actually had a lamb burger instead, and it was good. And then we went off to cater the big party, which was a huge success, except for the braised short ribs that exploded and leaked all over the back of his truck, but we salvaged that. And Beej is a great caterer and a good friend and a really good chef. And if you're in the Baltimore area and you need to cater a party or you want a private chef, you should definitely give him a ring because he's a good guy. Anyway, leading up to our topic today, since it's been pretty wintry here in New York this past week, today's beautiful, but it's been pretty chilly. I think it's a good time to talk about suck on feet. Duck confit. And other foods of that ilk, because they are the classic kind of winter food. It's the kind of stuff that people used to have to make for the winter out of necessity to get through that long, cold season in the pre-refrigeration days. So I think we'll talk about that. Plus, we'll talk about some winter vegetables, since I think last week I actually said that that's what this show would be about. So indirectly, it's going to be about winter vegetables. So let's start by talking a little bit about what duck confit really is, in case you're not familiar with it. It's a food that comes from southwestern France, from places like Gascony and Languedoc. And it's because in that region of France, they used to raise a lot of geese, or they still do raise a lot of geese and ducks along with their other farm animals, because the geese and the ducks were raised not just for their meat, but for their livers to be eaten as foie gras. It's a big foie gras producing region. And so you have all of these animals with big livers and big body parts that are excellent sources of food and of fat. And the animals were fed really well to fatten up their livers, and so you'd have really nice quality meats. And as in all non-tropical, non-temperate kind of climates that have seasons, as winter approached, the food available to feed the farm animals would become more scarce. So, you know, as the crops would be brought in and harvested, and then the fields would start to freeze, so there could be no grazing. So, you know, you'd have to slaughter your animals in the fall. That's sort of what the whole cycle is. And what you have to remember is that in traditional cultures like that, that, you know, refrigeration and long-distance refrigeration, you know, refrigerated trains and shipping is all a really, really new thing in the history of food and how we eat. It's only really in the less than 100 years that we've been all eating foods that are brought in from other places. Before that, you were a locavore, you know, whether you knew it or not. There was no term for it because that's what everybody was, unless you were very wealthy. So in the pre-refrigeration and pre-freezer days, before, you know, the last 100 years, people had to figure out ways to preserve their food to get them through the winter, because if you didn't plan well and you didn't preserve or put away enough food and you lived in a rural area, you were out of luck. There was a good chance you would starve to death. So over thousands of years of trial and error, people have figured out ways to make their harvested crops and animals last until spring, when you could start planting again and there would be wildlife around to kill. So that's where these traditions of curing and preserving and pickling and salting and smoking and, of course, duck confit come from. It was just sheer survival. And even here in the U.S., really, it wasn't even that long ago. If you read The Grapes of Wrath, which, you know, just took place in the 30s, there's this scene where the Joads are packing up to head out west out of desperation. And they have a pig. They've been raising a pig. And they can't take the pig on the truck with them live, because that would be crazy. And it was too precious of a protein source to abandon behind. So what'd they do? They killed the pig. They ate the high on the hog parts, the loin, the chops, and then they took the legs and the shoulders, they packed them into barrels, filled them with salt, and took it on the road with them. And the salt acted as a preservative, and it cured the meat, and it kept them from starving on the road. It kept them with a protein source, and they took it on their journeys. And that was only back in the 30s. That wasn't even that long ago. So these techniques are thousands of years old, but still apply today. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to actually talk about what confit is, how you make it, how it's done.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. If you are a fan of Why We Cook, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network, and you can become a fan. Send me questions, comments. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out my website at whywecook.com. Same thing. Send me questions, comments. Okay, so today we're talking about duck confit and a few other things, because over the weekend I was at a restaurant that was serving suck on feet when they meant to say duck confit. So I thought it was a sign that it was time to do the duck confit show. Okay, so what we're talking about now is that how people managed to preserve food for the winter in the era before refrigeration, which was basically up until the last 70 to 100 years. So in the, you know, millennia, multi-millennia that we've had of human existence before we've had modern electric refrigeration, if you wanted to survive the winter and you didn't live in a tropical climate, you had to figure out ways to preserve food to get you through. If you lived in freezing cold places, you could just keep everything frozen. If you lived in hot places, it wasn't a problem because you could grow food all the time. But everywhere else in between where most of us live, you had to figure it out. And so for the people of Gascony in southwest France, the geese and ducks that you raised for foie gras were fed very well until the late fall. Then they were killed. The livers were harvested for foie gras. And then the legs and the wings would be turned into confit. Ducks and geese are naturally very fatty birds, and they swim in cold water, so they need a lot of protection from the cold. But they're also fed a lot of extra grain to get their livers nice and fat, so it made for a good duck meat also. And usually when the birds were killed, the breast meat was eaten right away, or maybe smoked, because it doesn't work well for confit. But the legs and the wings work really well. You generally make confit out of parts that move a lot, have a lot of connective tissue that are kind of tough. The same kind of parts you would braise, anything that has a lot of connective tissue. Basically anything that supports a lot of weight or gets a lot of exercise on an animal is what you want to braise, and confit is a braise. So the legs and the wings would be rubbed down with salt first and maybe some spices or shallots. And what that does was it pulled out some of the moisture, because we're looking to cure the product here, which means pull out enough moisture so that it doesn't spoil. That's what curing is all about. And then they would be slowly cooked in a bath of their own fat. Boiled alive in their own, not alive, boiled, cooked in their own fat. And duck fat and goose fat is really good fat. It's really tasty. It has a high smoke point. It's not very saturated. It's actually really good for you. And it's a great cooking fat. It's also a great preservative. All fats are good preservatives because they seal food off from air and moisture, and air and moisture are the enemies of preservation. So the legs and the wings would be immersed in the fat. They'd cook really, really slowly until they were really tender, and then you'd leave them in the fat and let it cool until the whole thing solidified and the meat was completely submerged. It was like vacuum packing it up in fat. And that, like I just said, kept out the water and the air, because the water and the air are what cause spoilage of food. Right, you seal something up, it doesn't spoil. So the cooking phase of the confit, which is really like a braise, was done in fat instead of in stock or other water. And like I said, it's most effective on tough parts of the animal, necks, shanks, wings, legs, backs, that sort of thing. So then after cooking, you'd cool it down the fat, and the whole thing would be put in like an earthenware crock or a stone crock. And it would either be put down in the root cellar or it would be buried in the ground. Because in either place, you have that near constant cellar temperature of right around 55 degrees. And that's the perfect temperature to preserve the confit, but to not make it so cold that it wouldn't continue to ripen. So as it sat there all winter long and over the course of months and up to 2 years sometimes, it would ripen continually. And the ripening was an enzymatic ripening and a microbial ripening, but slowed down. Just like with cheese making or with wine making, it's a controlled process of spoilage, basically. So the ripening process was going on just slowly enough that it remained safe. There weren't enough microbes in there to cause spoilage, but the flavor would continue to get better. And because the meat was salted first, that helped to start the process of killing off any of the bad bugs. And then through the cooking and fat process, the rest of the water was driven off. So you got rid of the water, which is what attracts microbes, and then you sealed it up in the fat, which kept out the air. And there are stories of confit being stored up to 2 years and then still being eaten, because it was like a really ripe cheese or like an aged wine. It would just kind of get better and better and better until it hit kind of critical mass, and then it's bad. But I've eaten some that's fairly old, and it does taste pretty good. Then in the, you know, depths of winter, in the cold winter in France, when it was time to eat, you know, and you were getting pretty hungry, you would break out your confit and you would dig some out from the little crock, and you'd have this really delicious product. And you would take some confit and maybe some cured sausages that you had made in the fall and some smoked pork or something like that. And you cook it up with beans, because the southwestern French really like their beans, and they make something called cassoulet with all of those ingredients. Cassoulet is like a long, slow stew made from those meats and beans. And that's what confit is. And when I teach our unit on France at ICE, where I teach, we make confit when we're doing that part of France. And we use some of it right up the next day. But then the rest of it, what I like to do with my class is pack it up and put it away in the fridge. and leave it until the students are ready to graduate a couple months later. And they do this big graduation buffet, and I have them use it then after it's ripened for a couple months. And they use it to make hors d'oeuvres or canapes and things. And the taste definitely changes. It gets riper. It gets duckier. And the flavor gets more pronounced. And it's great. And most of them can really see the difference. But it's funny because some of them are actually really squeamish about trying it because they say that, you know, it's old. But they're not squeamish about, you know, eating a Twinkie that's been on the shelf for probably up to a year. That doesn't scare them. Or eating, you know, a hot dog from a street cart made from the scraps from the floor of the slaughterhouse. So I'm not sure what the squeamishness is about. But it does definitely get better with age. And, you know, it's just proof of, like, the power of curing and how people have figured out these techniques to make incredible food purely out of necessity, you know, survival necessity. And there are so many foods that come from this need. You know, think about all of the different foods that are cured or preserved, all the salumi in Italy and the charcuterie in France and all the smoked and cured fish that's out there. You know, things like jams, preserves, those are all ways of just keeping fruit. Cheese, of course, yogurt, a little more short term, but it keeps a long time. Pickles, relishes, chutneys, sauerkraut, kimchi, it's all the same thing. It's all ways of removing moisture from food so that the food keeps for a long time to keep you fed through the winter. And they're all ingenious, and they were all learned by trial and error over thousands of years, all in the name of survival. And I love it, and I love learning about it, because when I was a little kid, I loved the Little House on the Prairie books, and I reread them a couple of years ago. And in one of them, or actually in a lot of them, there's great descriptions about how the Ingalls family used all these various techniques to create their food to get them through. Because if you remember the books, they had some really, really rough times out there. And they had terrible, terrible winters when they were in the big woods. And they had terrible drought and crop failure. And, you know, they endured locusts and Indians and everything out on the prairie. But all through it, there's tales and, you know, recollections of how both of the parents just knew what to do. They knew what to do with the food. They knew how to kill it and how to preserve it and how to smoke it and how to store it. And, you know, I was fascinated by that and always wondered how did they actually know how to do all of it, you know, before TV, before books. But, you know, of course, generational knowledge gets passed down. So anyway, enough about Suc en Fee. When we come back in the last segment, we're going to segue into talking about the wonderful world of winter cruciferous vegetables. We'll be right back.
Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And if you want to send me questions, comments, anything like that, you can find us on Facebook. Or you can go to the website, whywecook.com, and check that out, too. I'd love to hear from you. Also, you should keep an eye out on the Heritage Radio Network website for a new show called The Naturalist that's being done by my father, Bernie Wides. He has a couple shows coming up, one on bats, one on butterflies. It's a pretty interesting show, so you should check that out too. Okay, so today we are talking about a couple different things. We started talking about duck confit, which is this cured duck that is eaten in southwestern France. It was a food that was invented over, you know, years of survival to get people through the winter. It was, you know, duck that was cooked in its own fat so that it would be preserved to get through the winter. And so we talked about how it's made in the last segment, and that then it's put away and it's kind of ripened for a while, a couple of months up to 2 years. So when you make your confit and you bury it in your backyard or in your root cellar and then you're ready to eat it, you just you dig up a piece. You just dig a piece out of the fat, basically, and then you smooth the fat back up and cover it up because you want to keep the whole thing airtight. You don't want any air to get on the remaining confit. You take that duck leg, and you can also incidentally do it with rabbit legs, chicken legs, turkey legs. They're all really good, but duck is the classic. And then so you take that duck confit, and then you warm it up, and you shred it, or you can throw it in the oven and roast it until it's hot, or you can put it in a saute pan, and it gets really crispy and good. Or you can throw it into a soup or a stew, or if you're cooking beans, you can cook it right in with the beans or throw the bones in with the beans. It's very nice, really hearty. It's also really good with winter greens like kale. But one of the great bonuses when you cook the confit is that a lot of that fat renders out, the fat that it absorbed when it was cooking, then melts out. And it's this really intense, really ducky, golden fat that comes out. And that fat, that's like pure gold. Like, that's not something you want to get rid of because the flavor in it is great. And it, I think I said before, it has a high smoke point, so you can saute with it. It's really good. And it's a great cooking fat. Sometimes people like to fry potatoes in it, do like duck fat French fries. It's kind of hip now to use duck fat in a lot of menus. So duck fat French fries or duck fat home fries. But it's also really good for cooking vegetables, especially the winter vegetables that tend to be a little bit on the bitter side or a little sulfuric, like the cruciferous vegetables, are really nice when you cook them with duck fat because the duck fat's kind of sweet and kind of rich. So it's a great counterpoint. So it goes really well with those winter vegetables, things like turnips and Brussels sprouts and kale and kohlrabi too. And very conveniently, these are the vegetables that taste best when you eat them late in the season, in late fall and early winter, because they're the vegetables that benefit from a little bit of cold, from a little frost nip in the field. And often farmers will leave these vegetables out until after the first frost because it makes them taste sweeter. I think I've talked about that before on the show. So the frost like makes the sugars intensify in the vegetables, and that's why if you're looking for really good Brussels sprouts, you won't find them until like now. They start to show up in the market now because you want them to get that little bit of frostbite. And the late root crops like parsnips and turnips are the same way. You want them to get pretty cold out there. It kind of makes them come alive. And I love these vegetables. I'm a really big fan of the fall vegetables. I love the roots. I love the fall greens. And maybe if you listen to this show regularly, you may have noticed that I talk about those vegetables a lot. So if I had some duck confit right now on me or in my kitchen, what would I do with it? How would I use that fat? How would I pair it with those vegetables? Well, what I would probably do is I would go to the farmer's market and I would get some little Japanese turnips. Here in New York at Union Square, we have a couple farmers that sell these little tiny white Japanese turnips that are great. If you can't find those, you just get regular old turnips and scrub them, peel them if you have to, if their skin's kind of thick, and then cut them down in little pieces. But I would toss those little baby turnips with some duck fat and some sea salt and black pepper and just roast them until they caramelize and they're delicious. And that's a classic French combination, is duck with turnips. I think the ducks also like to eat the turnips and the turnip greens, which makes sense because animals taste best with what they eat. So I would serve the turnips like that with the duck. But I would also maybe take some kohlrabi. You guys know what kohlrabi is? Anybody use it? It's used a lot more in Europe, especially in Germany, Austria, but I don't think Americans know kohlrabi that much. Basically, it's like a big broccoli stem. It's like if you took broccoli and you cut off the florets and then the stem swelled up into a big round ball. That's what kohlrabi is. And you just peel it down because it has kind of a thick skin. And then I would like take a mandolin and shave it super thin, paper thin, so you could eat it raw. And you can make a nice salad out of that with maybe some sherry vinegar and some walnuts. Really good that way. And then, of course, there's, you know, the Brussels sprout, the poor Brussels sprout that everybody thinks they hate, but they're so good. And sometimes when I do dinners or events at ICE where I teach, you know, I'll be announcing the menu. And when I say we're having Brussels sprouts, it's like the whole group just groans and you can see it in people's faces that we're torturing them. But Brussels sprouts are so great. And you have to try them again if you think you hate them. I did a show over the summer about the vegetables that you think you hate, but you shouldn't hate. You should love. And this is one of them. You should love the Brussels sprout. I'm not talking about the boiled to death, stinky, sulfury Brussels sprouts. I'm talking about Brussels sprouts that you toss with some fat, like some duck fat or some olive oil or bacon fat, and you roast them until they get really, really crispy and caramelized. And if you put your sheet pan or your roasting pan in the oven first and get it really hot and then throw the vegetables in, you'll get this like extra deep searing on them, the way you would sear like a piece of meat, and then they get really crisp and great and addictive. So if you think you hate the Brussels, you need to think again. It's time to grow up and try new things. Try vegetables that you think you don't like. So anyway, if I had the duck and the confit and the fat, where am I going with this? I would get some Brussels sprouts. I'd serve them that way. They're also really good just sliced up really, really thin into a slaw. And you can eat them raw that way too. They're nice. Because Brussels sprouts are just tiny little cabbages. That's all they are. You could also braise them. Throw them in like with some cider, some white wine, some onions, shallots. That's really nice too. I like them braised. But I just want to get back to the kohlrabi for a second before I run out of time because I'm almost done here. And because I think, like I said, we're all pretty unfamiliar with it. But if you like broccoli, especially if you like broccoli stems, you'll like kohlrabi because that's what it is. It's just like a big one. And if you get a big kohlrabi, you should peel it because the stem is kind of tough. But if you get little ones, you don't have to. And you just shave it really thin, like I said, or shred it on a box grater. And you can make a slaw out of it. Or you can treat it like other vegetables. Cut it up, roast it, saute it in slices, deglaze maybe with like a little sherry vinegar or something. It's really great. And since I mentioned broccoli stems, I have one little thing I need to talk about here. And that is what makes me crazy about broccoli is that people will buy a whole head of broccoli. They'll cut off the florets and use them and then throw away the stems. I don't understand that. What is that about? Are you crazy for doing that? You're paying for the whole head of broccoli. Why would you cut off the stems? It's like buying a whole chicken just for the breasts and then throwing away the legs. Why would you do that? You should eat the stems. I don't understand why people don't. Take a peeler, peel off the tough skin, and inside is this very tender, pale green, very delicate vegetable that you can cut up into little sticks and serve raw on a crudité platter, and nobody knows what it is. So it's kind of fun. You can play guess that vegetable, or you can shred it up too, make a salad out of it, throw it right into salads. It's so good. I don't understand it. When I teach, I see people take these whole heads of broccoli, whack off the stems, and throw them out. Such a waste. All right, anyway, I had to get that off my chest. That was my little rant for the week. We're just about out of time, so I hope you learned something this week, and maybe you'll go out and try some of these vegetables, or maybe even make some confit. You don't have to. You can just buy it. D'Artagnan makes it. You can buy it from them. But that's just about it for Why We Cook for this week. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.